out of class, right? So SI is 4 hours a week, 2 hours on Monday, and 2 hours on Wednesday from 8:30 to 10:30. So that cuts down your outside of class, outside of the campus study time. So it's really good. Right now I don't have a room yet. We're kind of in the works. But as soon as I get a room, I'll let you guys know. And our first session, we're going to jump right into it, and it's going to be next Monday, February 11th. Okay? Does anybody have any questions about SI or times or anything like that?
Is it DM?
AM. I just want to make sure I didn't make it wrong. I'll get a darker pen next time. Hopefully those in the back can kind of see it. But Monday, Wednesday from 8:30 to 10:30, right before class starts. Okay?
Do you have to sign up for it, or can you just show up?
You can totally show up. You can come late, come whatever. I understand that everybody has different obligations in the morning. But the more time you put into it, the more you're going to get out of it. So come all, come one, just show up whenever you can get there.
Yeah. What would we need to bring?
Oh, just like you would bring for your class. You want to bring your books, you want to bring pencils, your lab stuff. We go over it all. If you don't have it, then it's kind of hard to participate. Yeah. As of right now, those are the times that I have found that are the most effective for students, because I understand that you guys, some people have lab in the morning, some people have lab in the afternoon. So one way or another, someone's not going to be able to come, but then just come get the same thing. Sometimes I throw in Friday sessions right before an exam, right before a lab exam, so you guys will definitely do it. Good? Okay, well, hopefully I'll see you guys next week.
Okay, absolutely. My pleasure to have you. Okay, so here's the welcome letter that was emailed to you. I'm not going to give you a hard copy of the syllabus or the welcome letter or any of that information because it is in Blackboard. But those of you that need to register, I will give you this welcome letter, and it tells you how to log into Blackboard. Here is the URL, and the URL on the Cypress College server is a little bit different, but it redirects you to this site right here. This is a direct link to the Blackboard that you're going to be logging into. And in this welcome letter, of course, it's an active link that you can see right here. So I think if I just click on that or control click, it will open up the site. So the goal of this week is to make sure that every one of you can log into Blackboard. If that is a problem, right, then I can help you remotely sometimes. Reset your password or whatever, but in lab, if you're registered for the class and can't log in, then we just have to make sure that that you're good to go with that. So you need your student number right here. So here's my student number, and then your password, and it should be the same password that works for your gateway. If it's not, then in the welcome letter it tells you how to change your password so that it can be activated. And then, so here's my password. But you can't see that. And then log in. Okay, if the Cypress College website is down, if it's not working and that happens, and you try to use the redirect to the site that I just clicked, it won't work. All right, so that this, what I have in the welcome letter should always work as long as that server is up and running. All right, now you, and so over here you have a list of classes that you're taking. You're probably not taking quite as many as I am. And oh, I'll just pick any one of these anatomy labs. That's why when you email me with a question, make sure that you have the course number, which is 231, and your particular CRN. Otherwise, I won't be able to find you in Blackboard, right? It's just, it would take me 2 weeks to find you. So make sure that's in the subject line of the email that you send me. All right, so this is what our class looks like. Okay, announcements page, I just put the welcome letter in there. And what's important for you are in the left-hand frame, these are all the things that are available for you to use. Right, here's the syllabus, instructor information, office hours, telephone number, pre-lecture reading assignments. Oh, let's look in there. I should have two folders. Here is a list of pre-lecture reading assignments. I don't know if they're Word, they're Word files. So that means that you can modify them in your own computer. You can add text to them while you're studying, so it's not a PDF file. And I would like for you to get these done before I give lecture. So today, it would be really good to have chapter one completed, and then by Wednesday, chapter two. So make sure you get chapter two done. And once you fill that in, your answers might be right, or partially right, or completely wrong. And how are you going to know? Okay, even if it's right, but I don't think it's right, what would you like to know? At least you would like to know what I think is the correct answer, right? Because I'm the one that's making up the test. My answers are right, right? But depends on circumstances. There might be some modifications to it. So here are the answer keys. And I have a whole bunch of answer keys, but you can see, oh, item is not available. They're not available until after the lecture of that day. So after lecture, then you can go back and look at what I think are the correct answers, and then just kind of learn from what you put down compared to what I said, look at the book, and then you're just working with the information, and that's how you really learn new things. It's not just by reading a textbook, it's by working with information and working with interactive exercises and listening to a lecture again, perhaps. And I do record all my lectures on a recording device here, and I put it on a website, a different website. It's not in Blackboard because the files are too big. And you can go and listen to a lecture over and over and over again, or you can download it and play it in your iPod or computer or some kind of media player if you wish to do that. Okay, sometimes I don't record lectures, and that is sometimes a student likes to ask a lot of questions and they don't want anybody to hear their voice on the internet that's open to the whole world. So if that's you, if you don't want your voice showing up on the internet, then you have to let me know in writing that you don't want me to record lectures and put it on the internet, right? So there's a little bit of a privacy issue there. I don't care if my voice is up there, but if you need to maintain some secrecy that you're in this class, then just let me know privately, okay? Okay, some other things in Blackboard. Here in this one, Mareb 6E chapters, I have chapter 1 and 2. So if you don't have your textbook, you can get an electronic copy. It's in a PDF form. So those of you that are going to purchase your book maybe Wednesday but want to get a head start, here you can see the first two chapters. But since it's a PDF form, that means you can download it and you can put it on the internet, and that would be highly illegal to do that, right? This is copyrighted information. It's here for your own purposes, your own use. But you can't put it, you can't sell it to anybody, and you can't put it on the internet, right? But it's here. Supplemental instruction, I'm going to put the pertinent information in there. I think probably I have Christina's name. Yeah, but I don't know if that's the right time. Is that your right email address?
Yep.
Oh, good. Okay, so it requires some modification, but not too much. Lecture recordings, this is a site that you go to for lecture recordings, www.dr-j-gober. That's basically me, okay? I won't show you what it looks like. And it's going to be about a week before I build the page and put these lectures on there, because I can't put it on there anyway until I know everybody's happy with that. There are some free tutoring services besides supplemental instruction in the library or the Learning Resource Center. And you might want to take advantage of that, because sometimes they have models like eyeballs and brains and bones and things like that. So they can help you with that. And then tools you'll use to go find your grades and maybe some other things. Right. Okay, in weekly assignments, come on, cursor, weekly assignments, every week you have to meet some objectives. So here is week number 1. That's what we're on. So I'll click into here. All right, so every week has a list of objectives, and it tells you what chapter we're going to be working in and what page numbers you have to read, 1 through 13. And then there are a bunch of other exercises that will reinforce your learning and will help you reach those objectives. Like here are a bunch of labeling exercises. Maybe I'll keep this open and we can use these during lecture today. For instance, if we want to look at body cavities, here is an illustration of a body cavity. It's unlabeled, but you can drag and drop, right? Or you can hover and discover different ways of using that diagram. Okay, another good way of using diagrams, because it's important, because every test there are going to be some figures from your textbook that I photocopy, erase the labels, and put it on the exam, and then on the exam you have to relabel it with a matching column. All right, so I have you memorize a lot of figures, and those figures are here as a electronic interactive exercise for you, so you can do it over and over and over and over again. But there's another way that you can do that. Is in your textbook you can look at what figure you need to know and put a post-it over the label for that particular structure, and then so all the labels will be covered over, and then in your mind you can say, well, this is the frontal lobe, and then you can lift up the post-it and see if that's it, right? So that's another way of kind of doing like an interactive exercise in hard copy. All right, there's animation exercises. Here's another website that's really handy. Plus, here are practice quizzes. Besides the questions at the end of the chapter, which sometimes I put on exam as well. So at the end of the chapter, there are questions, and I tell you in the study guide what questions I like at the end of the chapter. Okay, and some of these questions here I might also put on the exam. And these don't count for anything. All right, but these are just practice exams, and these are, I don't like all of the questions, but here is the list of questions that I like that are relative or relate to this particular class. All right, so these are just practice quizzes for you. I don't grade them, but you can take these quizzes, right, and kind of gauge for yourself how you're going to do on a lecture exam. So you can become familiar and actually grade yourself before you take an exam. That's really nice, because then it might highlight some areas you need to go back and study, or it might tell you you're not studying enough or something, and you can use that to improve your grade. And then every week you have an online quiz to take. Okay, and here's the online quiz for week number one, and it's quiz number one, chapter one. So everything in these above pages right here could be included in your weekly quiz. All right, and let me go back to a previous page. Nice. Okay, so here is just the opening page for all the weekly assignments. You have a number of them opened up right now, but not the whole class, maybe the first 6 weeks, something like that. And they're all open for you to start working with, including the quizzes. And it might be confusing to know, what do you have to accomplish in each of these weekly assignments so that you don't get gypped out of course points, so that you don't end up with a zero for something that you should be getting points for. Okay, and if it's in Blackboard and it's worth course points, it's always going to have this icon, which is a dollar sign. So if you ever see anything with a dollar sign, you know that's something that you have to accomplish by a deadline to get course points. And if you don't, then you get zero for it, and it's really hard to average zeros out, right? It's much better to get a 50 or 60% on something rather than a zero. So pay attention to these dollar signs, right? So if we go back into week number one, okay, is there anything that you have to turn in to me or the internet here? No, no dollar signs. What about labeling exercises? Nope, but this will help you excel on the exam, so it's important. Animations, look at, right? Investigate this site over here. Practice quizzes, real important. Ah, what about this page right here? Week one, quiz one, chapter one, introduction. Dollar sign, that means it's worth course points for you. All right, so this is something that you have to do. And it's always, the deadline is given. Okay, it's always gonna be on a Thursday. I can't see it, but it's in here someplace. Thursday. All right, let me go back here. Here's the deadline, Thursday, February 14th. Because this is the first week and things get a little bit behind, your first online quiz is not due this Thursday. I give you an extra week, okay? But look at week number two. Do you have to do anything for week number two for course points? Yeah, you got another quiz. So you have two quizzes due next week, Thursday, by 11 p.m. All right. And then from here on out in the class, it's going to be one quiz a week. It might be on a couple chapters, might be on one chapter. It all depends on the length of the chapters. All right. The quizzes are set up so that you can take them an unlimited number of times when you log in. So again, that's repetition and remediation in the class. If you get a zero on the quiz the first time, that means with some studying, you can get 50% the next time. And then with some more studying, you can get 70%. And then maybe the third or fourth, fifth time, you can get 100% on that quiz. That doesn't mean you're gonna get 100% on the lecture exam, but for sure you're going in the right direction. Okay, and you can take these quizzes an unlimited number of times before the deadline. So here's a deadline for online quiz number two, February 14th at 11. But guess what? How many times after the deadline?
None.
Zero. It goes away. Okay, and I don't want to reprogram these sites because I just have too much to do. So if you sit down at 10:30 to do an online quiz that's due Thursday and you got 30 minutes to do it, chances are you're going to be able to do just fine, right? But if you're internet connection goes down, your computer breaks during that time, and you haven't submitted a quiz, then unfortunately you get a zero on that. So you can't procrastinate, right? You have to keep doing these things over and over and over again, and don't do them last minute, because that will not help you on the exam. Okay, so if you go to SI, the one time before the exam, that's not going to help you nearly as much as if you go to SI from the beginning and work all that repetition, and then you need time to learn stuff. Yeah, question.
For these quizzes, when you take them over and over again,
yeah.
Do you average the points or do you take the best?
Yeah, I programmed it in most cases. I meant to program it so that your highest grade is stored. Okay, unless I made a mistake in the programming. If that's not true, then let me know and I'll reprogram it. Okay, you'll be able to see all the attempts that you made and all the grades that you have in your grade book, and I can see them too. Right, and it should be the highest grade and not the most recent. Sometimes the most recent grade gets put in there because I didn't program it right, but usually I get it pretty close to right. All right, so since you have a deadline in this class, you might be really concerned about missing a deadline. Maybe a family issue happens Thursday that you have to deal with, or maybe your computer goes down Thursday afternoon, or sometimes you just plain forget. But there is a nice, easy way in this class to make sure that you never miss a deadline. Can anybody think of a way that you can approach this hybrid class and never have to worry about missing a deadline?
Put it to your phone.
Yeah, you can put it in your phone. You can set an alarm, for instance. Yeah, that is really handy. Another way, even if your phone dies and you can't hear the alarm, even if the internet connection dies and your phone alarm works but you can't use your computer, just get 1 week ahead taking these quizzes, right? So if you take two quizzes, like the chapter one and two, and then week three is going to be chapter four, get that quiz done this first week, that means that you can forget for a whole week and not miss out on any course points. And then next week, do the next week. Just stay 1 week ahead and you'll never get behind doing that, right? And you'll never miss a deadline. Those deadlines are really serious, right? So don't miss a deadline. Okay, I could talk forever on Blackboard, but I don't want to do that. I want to cover some content in the class. But I just want to remind you that it's the most important thing this week is, if you're registered for the class, to make sure that you can get into Blackboard and have access to the syllabus, right, and you know how to log into Blackboard and start working with some of these interactive exercises. And if you can't log in, see me in lab for sure, or try to reach me remotely via email, and the chance is really good I can get you into the class or into Blackboard, okay? That's the most important thing. So I'm going to just ask to see what kind of rush of business I might have. I want to find out, don't raise your hand just yet, who's registered for this class, number one, and number two, you're prevented from getting into Blackboard. So who's registered but cannot log in? Raise your hand. Anybody? Oh, beautiful. Computers are getting better and better and better. Or I'm getting better at programming. I don't know what it is. All right, so nobody's in that situation. That is excellent. Okay. So in Blackboard, what else do I have? Maybe under course documents. Lecture slides. All of these are open. And so you could print these out. These are just, are they Word files? Yeah, they're Word files. You don't have to print them out. You can work in your laptop or some other mobile device and work with them. But these are the exact slides, the Word slides that I show. And then the graphics are just pictures that are in your textbook. If it's a different kind of graph that I want to show you, then I'll provide that for you electronically or a hard copy. All right, so you could print these out ahead of time and take some notes. You can embellish these notes if you want. Okay, or cross things off that you don't want because you know it already. And this way, you can really listen to lecture and look at the pictures that I'm showing of the structures. You don't have to be drawing the pictures out or copying what I'm saying down, right? Because I know for me, if I'm writing down what somebody says, I'm not listening to what they're saying because I'm writing down something that already happened a long time ago, right? And then I'm missing what's happening. So, this is handy. But nonetheless, some people learn by writing things out. If you're the kind of person that needs to write something out to learn it, and probably all of us are that way to some degree, then after lecture, you should rewrite your notes. You should combine what's on this piece of paper with whatever notes that you took. Okay, and maybe you could do that in a group or something, okay, group activity, and that will help you. That's just another study technique. And in these classes like physiology, anatomy, micro, you have to kind of figure out what works for you. It won't work for everybody, and that is what the learning process, right? But nonetheless, it will cost time to do it. All right, so we want to look at this right here, but I have already downloaded. If you want to download it, right click, right? Don't use the regular left click on your mouse button. Hopefully all you've had two buttons on your mouse, maybe not. But if you left click, right, then you get another menu and you can say save target as or save link as, and then that will download that file to your computer. And then you never have to have internet access again, right? You can just access that file directly on your hard drive. So that's a handy tool to know. I don't really know much how you guys are doing with computers. You probably know more than me, but I thought I'd show you that little trick. Okay, so no questions on the welcome letter. Anybody have any questions with Blackboard? It does go down sometimes. I guess a favorite time for it to go down is Friday evening. That's when they do a lot of maintenance. They update Blackboard programs or work on the interface between Cypress College. So that's why the deadline for quizzes is not Friday at 11 p.m. So you might not want to count on that time in particular for having good Blackboard access. Okay, so I'm going to close that down because I need to get at this window. Anybody have a question on the syllabus? I really don't give a hard copy to anybody because it's in Blackboard at a number of locations. Yeah.
For the goggles and stuff?
Yeah.
By the first lab?
You don't need that by the first lab. What you need for the first lab is this package right here, which is in the bookstore. It contains the textbook and the lab manual, a CD, and an atlas. And so this is the whole package. So it's not just the textbook. So if you just ordered the textbook, edition number 6 on the internet, you still don't have the course materials. You need the lab book. And I included the lab and all these other materials because I told the publisher that if you wouldn't sell it to me for half price, then I'm going to go to a different company. And they said, ooh, well, we can't do that. I said, okay, well, this is a McGraw-Hill, then I'm going to go to Pearson and use their anatomy book because their anatomy book is pretty good too. And so then their boss called me back and said, hey, guess what? We can give you a deal, but we have to package it all together. All right, so it's still relatively expensive, but don't forget, it's got everything that you need in there. It's got the lab manual and the textbook, okay? So that should help you out financially a little bit. Okay, that answer your question?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, the other required materials. All right, the required materials you need on the first day have this asterisk. Other materials that you need somewhere during the class, I don't have an asterisk by it. And that's including goggles, all right, and these gloves, and I just put a link in here, probably Amazon or something. Oh, it probably tells me right there. Yeah, Amazon. So if you want to buy these things on the internet, you can, but I have this link right here just so that you can see what these things are. Right? You don't have to buy them from Amazon. Here are the safety glasses. Actually, this is really nice right here, the Kimberly Clark type fluid shield. It's just a nice mask that covers your whole face, but it's really easy to breathe in. It's got a mask. It's all in one, folds flat, fits in your textbook. So these things you need by when we start doing dissections. Okay, and all of these things you can find in different stores all around town. Okay, but there are links in here, right? Optional, you don't need dissection scissors or a scalpel. We provide them in lab, but take a guess. Are the scalpels sharp or dull that I will give you? They've been around for 50 years, right? So they're going to be a little dull. They might be a little rusty. So you might consider bringing in your own stuff, okay? But I'll try to provide good stuff for you, but it's not always guaranteed. Okay, so you might want to get some of these things, bookstore or other places. Okay, any other questions? Yeah. No, you don't have to buy it. But once I give you an ad code, then you have to promise me that you're going to get it this week. And you'll probably, and I'll ask you to show me sometime, like maybe Wednesday, or if you have a Wednesday lab late, okay? Because you guys really need to get started using those materials. Fortunately, you have the first two chapters in Blackboard. Where are they at? They're over here someplace. Yeah, Marib 6, that's the edition we're using. You have two chapters that you can just use just in your mobile device or computer or whatever. Okay, so maybe I'll mention some things about the schedule later on, but not today. But basically, you're gonna be graded on online quizzes, You're going to be graded on lab quizzes every week. You're going to be graded on lab practicums. The day you have a lab practicum, you don't have a lab quiz. Get a little breather there. And then lecture exams. So those four things. And every once in a while, a little extra credit. Okay, that just add to your score. Not too much extra credit. And then it's just a 90, 80, 70 scale for grades after that. And the computer tells me what your grade is. Okay, so if you ask me, oh, if I'm close to an A, I have an 89%, what is that? The computer's gonna tell you it's a B, okay? Because it's not a 90%, you gotta get at that 90% level, okay? Okay, let's continue to close some of these things down. Maybe I'll try and save that, okay. Do I have nothing? Okay, let's open some things up. My computer. Nah, I didn't want that. Documents. 231 Gover. Ah, nice. All right, so here's some lecture notes that you have exact copies of. Okay, and over here, usually I put pictures. And I might have to redefine these windows a little bit. Let me put this kind of light right smack in the middle. Go back up. Here are the pictures that are in your textbook for chapter one. So make sure you sign the sign-in sheet. That's how I know you are in class. And if you're in class and take good notes and forget to sign the sign-in sheet maybe five times, I might drop you. And you could say you're in class, but are you really in class if you don't sign the sign-in sheet? You're not really in class, right? You're only in class if you sign the sign-in sheet. That's really important because I can't remember who's in class or not. It goes for lab too. If you don't sign the sign-in sheet, then you're absent in class. So make sure you sign the sign-in sheet. Okay, oh, close. Put this over here. Okay, so those that need to add the class, see you right before lab. And then I'll close the door. If I'm done adding and the class is closed, please don't disturb the class if you can't get in for that particular lab period. All right, you should know something about anatomy and something about physiology. There are two topics that are related to each other. Okay, but you should know what each of those are individually. Anatomy is the scientific study of structure of things. And since this is human anatomy, the structure that we're most interested in is what? The structure of the human body. Right, so we're going to look at human bones and human muscles and human nervous tissue. Rarely will we look at some other things except when we do dissections. We don't dissect human tissue, but we'll do cow eyes and pig hearts and things like that. Okay. And then there is physiology. Physiology is the scientific study of how things function inside your body, the processes that take place to maintain a living state inside your body. And in order to know physiology, you really have to know anatomy. Anatomy is a prerequisite for understanding physiology. It's the basic information that you have to know. Okay, so anatomy is fundamental to physiology. And so that's why we have the courses here in that order. Anatomy first, we learn structure, and then once you know the structure, then we can name these things and then understand what the function is. We understand the function of some things in the body, but not everything. That's why we have this physiology class. Like for instance, here we have, what am I holding up right here? I've got a hand with a bunch of digits on it. A digit is just a finger, right? And if you don't know the structure of the hand, and if I ask you, can you grab anything with your hand? And if you don't know what a hand is, what is your answer going to be? Well, I don't really know because I got to go look up and see what a hand is, right? So you got to know the pieces of a hand. So you got these fingers right here, and you got a thumb, and the thumb is really nice because you can move it anteriorly to your hand, means in front of your body, right? And now you have an opposable digit to the rest of your fingers, and you can nicely grasp things, right? So you got to know these digits and where they're located. And for instance, if by accident you lose your thumb, and you can see I'm very proud of this. I have what, all fingers and all thumbs. That's really nice. because I grew up in a machine shop. Not everybody did have all their digits. But if you lose this thumb over here, what happens to the function of your hand? It changes drastically. Now you can't really grab things, right? You just have these fingers right here. With a lot of practice, maybe you can learn how to hold a pencil and pick up a coin or something, but it's not going to be the same kind of thing, right? So if you change the structure of something, you change the function. Or if the function in your body changes, what does that mean? That means that some structure inside your body has changed that you're not aware of, right? So we understand anatomy first and then structure on top of that. We got to know structure first and then on top of that, the function. And the heart, for instance, we're going to learn all the chambers of the heart and then we'll pretty much know how the heart works. There are different branches of anatomy, gross anatomy, microscopic, developmental, embryology, surface anatomy, and gross anatomy. This term gross right here just means big, what you can see with your naked eye. Okay, so I just held up my hand, that's gross anatomy. Or I could point to my elbow, that's gross anatomy. And if we look at something really small that you can't see with your naked eye, like a cell or a group of cells, we don't call that gross anatomy, we call that what? Microscopic anatomy. So these are all different disciplines. Everybody has these different specializations. Developmental anatomy. This is how a person changes their structure through their whole life, because our body does change through our whole lifetime. I'll try to point these things out. You're a very busy person, even if you don't know about it, because a lot of things are changing in your body all the time. But you might have a sense of this, because if you look at your grandpa, what can you tell me about their nose? It's bigger. Because it grows their whole life, right? It's not the same as what you have right now. Same thing with ears. They don't really stop growing. They slow down, but they keep growing. So developmental anatomy is important. Embryology is anatomy, but that's before you're born, right? All the different structures that make you up as you, when you grow from a single cell that we call a zygote to a fetus, right? And then a newborn baby. Surface anatomy, we don't do much in terms of microscopic developmental or embryology in here, just a little bit. Surface anatomy, again, just a little bit. Surface anatomy is handy, however, because you can use some landmarks on your body to know where deeper structures are. Like, for instance, if I have this elbow right here, then I know something about nerves and tendons that go through this area just by looking at the surface object, right? I don't have to do any surgery or do an MRI or CT scan or anything, because I kind of know what's in that area. That's a little bit more advanced sort of anatomy. What we like to do is what we call systemic anatomy. We break the body down, because the body is really complicated, we break it down into some small parts, and then we study these small parts, and then once you know what each of these parts are, they can add the parts together and understand what the whole is. So sometimes it's really important to break things down into small bits of information. And systematic anatomy is just that we study the nervous system as an item, and we learn about nerves and the brain by itself. We don't really learn about muscles that are close to the nerves or blood vessel supply. Okay, and then we might study the cardiovascular system, maybe learn a little bit about nerves, but really focus on the anatomy of the heart and blood vessels, right? And we do skeletal system. That's a system all by itself as well. And then we're not really so interested in muscles or nerves at that particular time. We're just interested in studying the bones. So we break anatomy down into organ systems. So what I have right here are a number of slides of organ systems. This one right here is one of the organ systems we're going to look at right away. It's made up of hair and skin and nails, and this is the largest organ in your body. And what does it say it is right here? That is the integumentary system, which is skin plus a bunch of other accessory structures. That's probably not a familiar term for you, right? But I will ask you, okay, I'll give you a structure and you have to tell me what part of the system it belongs to. Okay, so if it's skin, you would say integumentary system. Okay, if I say like the humerus, which is a bone, what system does that belong to? Yeah, skeletal system. So let's go to the next one. Skeletal system. You might know something about the pelvis right here or vertebrae. Those don't belong to the muscle system, they belong to the skeletal system. Some of these are pretty easy to know. All right, what about the muscle system, muscular system? What's your favorite muscle? Think of one. Biceps, right? Brachialis underneath that, for instance. Abdominal muscles, rectus abdominis. All right, all of these things don't belong to the skeletal system. They belong to the muscular system. What's another one? Okay, here's the nervous system, brain, spinal cord, bunch of nerves. Okay, endocrine system. Oh, yeah, we're going to spend some time with the endocrine system, but it contains endocrine glands, and we're going to learn about some hormones that these endocrine glands secrete into the blood. Okay, but we're going to study it as a system by itself. Here is the cardiovascular system. Here's the heart. Okay, and here we see blood vessels. We're going to break it into a couple chapters. We're going to study the heart. So that's going to be the cardiology chapter. And then we're going to look at vessels. That will be like the angiology chapter. Okay, then we add them together. Then we can get the cardiovascular system. So we'll break it down a little bit. What's another one? Lymphatic system. Yeah, you're going to like that one. Respiratory system, digestive system. That's everybody's favorite. Digestive system right here. Because it's the most disgusting, gross system to look at, and it's just fun to talk about, okay? And I don't mean gross in the sense of big. Okay, urinary system, all right, is another important system. And here we have the diversification system, okay? And I'll ask you sometime during the class, what's the function of these different structures right here? Okay, so what's the function of, it says reproductive system. I want to know what the function of this reproduction system is. I'm not sure anybody could tell me just right now. Okay, so make sure you know some organs in each of those different organ systems. Okay, so in anatomy and in all kinds of study, we like to break a complex subject down into smaller pieces. And in this particular class, okay, and even more important, for instance, in physiology class, is that we like to start with something that's really small in your body. And the smallest things are chemicals. Right? And so what I'm talking about now are the different levels of structural and functional organization of your body. And we're going to start with these small things like chemicals and organelles. And then we're going to add these together and get the next biggest thing. So here are some chemicals like adenosine triphosphate. Maybe some of you heard of that. Ca right here is calcium. You do not have to know the chemical symbols for these different elements right here or ions in this class, but physiology you do. So if you want to get a head start on physiology, go ahead and memorize these chemical symbols for calcium and potassium and sodium. Okay, cholesterol. Who's heard of cholesterol before? Anybody? Yeah, some people. Okay, oh, what's this? H2O. Chemical. This is chemistry. Wait, no, you said this was an anatomy class, and now you're making me learn chemistry. What's H2O? Water. Not too hard. Chemistry, right, is really not too hard. But it is. Here's something interesting. Chemistry, since it's on the first level right here, right, you could kind of guess that chemistry is fundamental to anatomy and fundamental to physiology as well. It's even more important for physiology. And so I recommend that people take a college level chemistry class before physiology. Right? You just have to do that. And if you're the kind of person that's kind of cringing right now and you're saying, oh, well, I don't like chemistry, you know, I'm just going to take physiology. Guess what? You're exactly the person that I'm talking to. Okay, you need to get over that anxiety. You should know chemistry before physiology, because chemistry is what? The fundamental basis of physiology. Right? If you're a chemist, you don't have to know anything about physiology. If you're a chemist, you don't have to know anything about anatomy. But if you're an anatomist or a physiologist, you gotta know chemistry. Right? So you gotta work that in there someplace. And every student that has taken my advice who didn't want to, guess what they did later on? They thanked me. Okay, so please work that into your schedule. If I ran things here, I would never let anybody take a physiology class without chemistry, but it is not a prerequisite here. It is at most colleges. Okay, so if we add a bunch of chemicals together, then we get a small structure inside the cell that we call an organelle. Here's a list of some organelles. Okay, the nucleus that contains your DNA in the form of chromosomes. Or chromatin, rough endoplasmic reticulum, Golgi body. These are all different structures inside the cell that when we get to that chapter, we'll look at in some more detail. But these are small things that you can just barely see with a light microscope. You can't really identify them, but you know they're there, right? But if we add a bunch of organelles together, okay, that produces a cell. And that's something that we can see underneath a microscope. So what are the building blocks of a cell? I could ask you. Building block of a cell are organelles. Okay, it shows you right on this chart right here. And what are the building blocks of organelles? They're chemicals, right? So you need chemicals to build organelles. And what do you need to build a cell? You need organelles to do that. Okay. And a cell is a basic living unit of all life. If you're wondering if something is alive or not, you have to look at it and see if it has all the basic structures that a cell has. And a cell has all of these organelles right here. It has chromatin, it has a cell membrane, and cytoplasm. That's what makes a cell. And some things kind of look like life, but they don't have cytoplasm, and so they're not alive. Bacteria have all of these things. Bacteria has a cell membrane, it has DNA, it has cytoplasm, so it is a living thing. So what can you do with a living thing? Or what would you like to do with a living thing if it's in your body and it's producing pathology? What would you like to do with that thing? Well, you'd like to kill it, right? So that then you're not sick anymore. You're not in a diseased state. But other things can infect your body and they're not alive, like a virus, because a virus does not have cytoplasm. So you might think, well, gee whiz, how do you then treat a viral infection? Because if a virus is not alive, how can you kill it, right? I mean, the question doesn't even make sense. So treatments for viral infections are really tough. Okay, and they're much more dangerous. So I hope all of you have gotten a flu shot already. Okay, because pretty much you have to rely on your own immune system to get over that kind of infection. And if you're not strong enough to maintain yourself for a period of about 2 weeks until your immune system can really fight the infection, then it is a lethal infection for many, many people. Right? Okay, so that's a cell. And if we put a bunch of cells together, then we get the next complicated structure, and that's what we call a tissue. So the building block of a tissue are cells, and what's really nice in this class is that there's only four kinds of tissues. Okay, as a matter of fact, in any class, if you point to some place on your body, I could tell you it's one of these four different kinds of tissues, which is really nice and simple. Epithelium is a tissue that covers a surface or lines a cavity. Connective tissue just connects different parts of your body together. Muscle tissue, what does it do? It contracts, right? It's specialized for contraction, okay? And nervous system, of course, you sort of know about. It transmits information long distances in your body very quickly to control different parts of your body. So these are the four kinds of tissues. What's the building block of a tissue? A cell, right? So a tissue is made up of cells, and all of the cells that make up a tissue have a similar structure, and if it has a similar structure, what does that mean? It has a similar function. So cells that make up a tissue look the same and they all kind of function the same as well, because that's how we define a tissue. And if we put a couple different tissues together, like an epithelium with connective or epithelium and muscle or nervous and muscle, guess what we get? We get an organ, okay, like the heart. The heart is just not muscle. It also has connective tissue. It has nervous tissue in it, so it is an organ. So the building block of an organ are different kinds of tissues. Right? And so an organ is two or more tissues which work together to perform one function, like the heart is what? To contract and pump blood. But it's got to have nervous system, okay, muscle tissue, connective tissue. And if we put different organs together, right, and if they're performing one function, like blood vessels and the heart, what do we get? An organ system right here. So the building block of an organ system is an organ. And if we put, and we just look at all the different organ systems, like skeletal system, muscle system, right? If you put all those systems together, which at the end of the class you'll be able to do that, what do you have an understanding of? The organism, right? So it's impossible to understand what an organism is doing without breaking it down into these basic building blocks, which is what we're going to do. All right, so here are some of the organ systems that we looked at already. Different books have different numbers. Some have 11, some have 7. Depends on the amount of detail that you want to go into. Okay, terminology. And body plan. Here we have an illustration on the right-hand slide. Is it shown? It is shown. Oh, you know what I usually do? I usually do something like that. Maybe it's a little bit easier to see. Is that easier? Is that better to see the slides like that? Okay, but don't fall asleep. Okay. So over here, we see a bunch of different regions. But before we talk about regions, here's a man standing up His feet are flat on the ground, and he's looking straight at you. This is what we call anatomical position, because sometimes we want to know how to get from this thumb to this elbow. So we have to know, we have to have a map of what that is. Or we might want to know, how do we get from this nose over here down to a toe? Or how do we get from a belly button, okay, to a nipple? We have to know some standard way that the human body is positioned. We call that anatomic position. And it's illustrated nicely on this diagram. If I'm just standing here, I'm sorry, I kind of look like I am in anatomical position because I'm standing erect. I'm looking at you, right? This is my front side or anterior side, and I'm nice and relaxed, okay? But this is not anatomical position. Does anybody know why this is not? Yeah, why? My thumbs, that seems so obscure and not important. But you know what? It is. That's the clue. Because on the diagram, the thumbs are pointing to the outside, where I was just resting, right? My thumbs are pointing to the inside. Outside is what we call lateral. To the inside is what we call medial. We'll go over that again. So an anatomic position is like this. So we know exactly where all the fingers are compared to the thumb, okay, which is different than when you're like this. All right, so the palms have to be facing anteriorly, okay, in order to be in anatomic position, and your hands down by your side. Here are some regions in the body. There are some nice interactive exercises in Blackboard to help you memorize these different regions right here. It might seem a little hard to remember, and it is if you just want to draw this out and try to remember these things, but it's important to know these different regions because you'll use these terminologies throughout the whole class. And if you know them now, that will make the other parts of the class a whole lot easier. Okay, so for instance, your forearm right here is what we call the antebrachium. Right here is the brachial part, or the brachium. This is the anterior arm. Okay, and here we have the cervical region, that's your neck. And this part of the chin, okay, the tip of your chin has a name, that we call that the mental region. Maybe somebody thought that had to do with thinking or contemplation, but I don't know why that is. Okay, nasal region. Okay, orbital region refers to the eye. What's not on this diagram, which we might say, is this ear right here. Sounds like orbital. This is the otic region, O-T-I-C, okay, as opposed to orbital. And there's different instruments that you would use to look into somebody's eye compared to somebody's ear, and they're named differently because this is the otic region. So you use an otoscope to look into somebody's ear, but an ophthalmoscope, right, to look into somebody's eye. So it's really helpful to know these different regions. I don't want to spend too much time going over these, but like axillary region in the armpit, inguinal region down over here, okay. That's good for this figure. Let me look at this. Okay, I want to go over something that sometimes is confusing, but I don't have a slide. So we have two main regions in the body, your head, your cervical region, and your trunk. That's what we call the axial region because it forms just an axis. And then you have things stuck onto the axial region like this thing right here and this thing down here, your appendages. This is what we call an upper appendage. This is what we call a lower appendage. We don't really want to call that an arm or a leg. All right, so make some notes of this. Between your shoulder and your elbow, in anatomy, that is what we call your arm. It's a part of your upper appendage. So here's your arm, that makes sense. But guess what? Between your elbow and your wrist, that's not your arm. You go, well, for sure it is. I'm going to say for sure it's not. Okay, you got to know what the name of this thing is. That in anatomy is what we call a forearm. So here's arm, here's a forearm. Okay, your lower appendage is a little confusing the same way. Between your hip and your knee, okay, that's not your leg. You go, yeah, it's your leg. And I'll say, no, it's not your leg. It's your thigh. So your thigh is between your hip and your knee. Between your knee and your ankle, that's your leg. All right, so make sure you understand that terminology and we'll use it all the time. All right, so this is your upper appendage made of your arm and forearm. Here's your lower appendage, thigh and leg. Okay. Directional terms. This is kind of fun. Anterior is just the front of somebody's body. And what does that mean? Front compared to what? Compared to anatomical position. right? And so here's the front, and of course, most of these are paired terms, so you have a backside, you have a front side. The front side is anterior, the backside is posterior, but it also has some other names. Oh, and I didn't upgrade this slide. There's also something called ventral and dorsal. Ventral means anterior, at least in the human. Dorsal means posterior in the human. Might not mean that in a dog because they have four legs, right? So they have a kind of different designation. But since we're bipedal, our anterior and ventral side are exactly the same. Okay, but a dog's belly button is where? Not pointing forward, it's pointing down, right? So there's a little bit different terminology. You have to know the terminology for humans in here. Anterior is just the front compared to anatomic position. Superior, inferior, it doesn't mean something's better than another, but it just means that something is sitting on top of something else in anatomic position. Like the belly button right here is what compared to the nose? It is inferior. It doesn't mean it's less or more of anything. Some people definitely will think it's more than a nose, but it just means what? Below. And you can then also say that the nose is what to the belly button? The nose is, let's see if I can get this cursor. Oh, that works much better. The nose is superior to the belly button. Okay, what about the elbow compared to the wrist? The elbow is what? Superior. Yeah, that's a really good use of those terms, right? And digits are inferior compared to this palmar region in the hand. And so that's why we have to know anatomical position, because with anatomical position, if somebody uses a directional term, you know how to get from one place in the body to another. Cranial and caudal are a little funny because caudal means toward the tail, right? And do humans have a tail? They do not have a tail. But just imagine you do have a tail, okay? And cranial means up toward your brain. So anything that is superior, sometimes people use cranial. If something is inferior, we have a tendency to say caudal sometimes. But sometimes it doesn't make sense. But in other kinds of animals, it does. All right, so cranial, more or less superior, caudal is inferior. Medial and lateral, we talked about that in terms of thumbs. And again, we always use these terms relatively in terms of two structures. So we could say, what is the thumb right here compared to the belly button? The thumb is lateral, because it's pointing out to the side. Okay. And what about the mediastinum, which is this area right here, compared to the axilla region? Yeah, this region right here is medial. So anything more toward midline is going to be medial. Something that's farther away is going to be lateral. You'll be familiar with that. Proximal and distal. Well, this is an interesting term. This is probably the hardest one to understand. But your body is put together in segments, and these segments are connected to each other. Okay, like you might have some blood vessels down over here, but they're connected to the big pump, which is the heart, right? So here you have a heart that pumps blood down into this blood vessel. They're connected with each other. It's the heart first and then a blood vessel. So we like to say that this blood vessel is distal to the heart because it's farther away from some center location in the body. Okay, so it's a continuation of this area. That's a nice way of thinking about it. Some kind of continuation of some part of the body. You could think of nerves, you could think of muscles, right? Whatever is closest to some central location of the body, that's what we call proximal. Anything that's farther away is what we call distal. So somebody might not have a good pulse, okay, that you can feel in their neck, feel in their arms, but you might be able to. Well, for instance, you might not be able to feel it in their neck, but you can feel it in their wrist over here. Okay, and since it's far away from the heart, sometimes we call that pulse what? The distal pulse. Not that because it's the part of the body, it's just because it's far away from the heart. Okay, and sometimes down over here, you could call that a distal pulse as well. Okay, superficial and deep. Oh, I'll use these terms quite a bit. Superficial means on the surface of the body or close to the surface. Deep means an underlying structure in anatomic position. So we have the heart, and can you think of any organ systems that are superficial to the heart? Okay, some people said skin. That's pretty good, but guess what? On a test, I don't think I'd give you credit for that, because what word do I want you to use? Integument. That's right, integument. All right, so if I'm going to ask you organ system, I'm probably not going to ask something really easy like bones. I'm probably going to ask you something you never heard about that then I have an understanding that you're learning something in here. That's the whole point of coming, right? So integumentary system is superficial to the heart. Okay, and here we have some muscles. They're superficial to bones, but bones are also then deep compared to these muscles. And if we look at an organ like the brain, there are superficial regions, mean regions that are on the surface, and they're deep regions of the brain. There are superficial regions in the kidney and deep regions in the kidney. Same thing for adrenal gland. And all organs have different designations, different kinds of structures and different layers, right? Arranged in superficial to deep. So those are important. And we're going to know a lot about layers in here, because that's really helpful for diagnosis and prognosis and treatment to understand layers of what makes up the human body. Okay, body planes. All right, so here I have a cursor and I'm going to put it on the table right here. And you could describe in this room exactly where this is a mouse. Okay, so I put a mouse right here on the table. And you could tell me exactly where that mouse is. What would you have to tell me? So I would know, even if I had my eyes closed. You would have to say how far in front it is from the front wall, right? And we could say maybe 3 feet. And is that good enough? Would I know exactly where that mouse is if you tell me it's 3 feet away from the front wall? No, because it could be what? It could be over here, it could be over here. Right, and it could be up there someplace as long as it's 3 feet away. So that's not good. So what else do you want to tell me? How far away it is from the walls, the right and left. Right, so you got anterior, posterior, you got right and left. And by the way, right and left are proper anatomical terms. They're proper, like what hand am I raising right here? My right hand, here's my left hand, same for you. Okay, so right and left is good terminology. So you could tell me how far away it is from the front wall, how far away it is from a side wall, all right? But does that tell me exactly where that mouse is? No, because I could search anywhere in here. What else do you have to tell me? How high it is off the floor. So if you tell me how many things do you have to tell me so I know where that mouse is?
Three.
Exactly three things. So we have three physical dimensions in our reality. So to understand our body, we have to have, guess how many planes? You got to have three planes to understand exactly what's in your body. And in most cases, these planes are oriented to make things nice and simple. They're oriented so that they're perpendicular to each other. All right? And there are three planes. You have a sagittal plane, transverse and frontal. And I'm sure here's a really good picture. Fortunately, it showed up just right here. Okay, the plane that separates the right side of your body from your left side, it goes like right down through your nasal septum, right between your two front teeth, right through your belly button, right here. This is what we call a sagittal plane. Sagittal separates right from left, all the way up and down. Sagittal, and here your book says median, I've never heard anybody call it a median in a hospital, but if you want to put that on a test, that's okay, I'll give you credit for it. And if you want to use that in a clinical setting, you can, probably they'll know what you're talking about. But mostly you should say what? Sagittal. And if that and the sagittal plane can move over to the left or to the right, but if it is right smack in the middle that I see right here, then that's a special sagittal plane that we call mid-sagittal. So mid-sagittal is exactly right in the middle, and it's separating your body into two equal parts, basically, because in a lot of systems, organ systems, that we have bilateral symmetry. So if we have a hand and a thumb on one side, we got a hand and a thumb on the other. That's mostly true. Okay, if we separate somebody's body from superior to inferior, that's the transverse plane, and there's really no mid-transverse plane because there's no symmetry from superior to inferior, right? You don't have anything that looks like a head down here or a nose, right? So there is no mid-transverse plane, but it can shift up, right? We might want to look at somebody's neck, and that's just a nice transverse plane through the cervical region or through the cranium to look at somebody's brain, right? So transverse separates a superior from inferior. That's two. What do we need? One more, right? And you can see that these planes are all perpendicular to each other. And the other one is called the frontal plane. That separates an anterior part from a posterior part of your body. And again, there's no symmetry between anterior and posterior, so there's no mid-frontal plane, right? But remember, these planes can switch back and forth. Frontal plane in clinical setting sometimes has a very familiar term. It's used a lot. It's called coronal, C-O-R-O-N-A-L, coronal plane or frontal plane. Actually, coronal is probably used more than frontal. But if you use either of those, I'm sure everybody will know what you're talking about. Maybe not this median plane. Somebody might have to stop and think when they were in anatomy, which could be like 20 years ago, right? Like if you see me in the hallway and you say, where's the median plane? I'm going to have to think, that's mid-sagittal. Okay. All right, so know these planes. Sometimes a part of your body doesn't sit exactly on one of these planes, like your heart, for instance, kind of starts in the middle. But what side of your body is your heart mostly on? You probably know this without taking anatomy. What side of your body is it mostly on? It's kind of mostly on the left. So as you go from superior to inferior, the heart is angled like that. And if you want, if you're going to do an MRI study or CT study, you might want to get a nice perpendicular scan along the heart, but now it's going to be angulated, right, to view the heart just right. And that's what we call an oblique plane. Oblique means it's going to be angulated away from these standard planes right here. It's not going to be connected with some nice 90 degree angle. All right, so let's go over some of these. Here's a kind of funky scan. Okay, what kind of plane is this that we're looking through somebody's body? Is this transverse, sagittal, or frontal? Yeah, frontal or coronal, right? Because we can see right to left, we can see superior and inferior, we just can't see front to back. We just see this one slice. What about this one right here? Okay, this is transverse, a nice transverse section. Sometimes as you think of something that's really long, like from your foot to the top of your head, right, we kind of think of that as an axis, right? And so an axial section would be a transverse section through, okay, something that's really long. If it's a long cell, a transverse section is going to be what? Just nice and perpendicular to the long axis of that cell or organ, for instance. Okay, one more thing. This one here. Oh, I see a nice spinal cord. It's a pubis right here. Urinary bladder. What kind of plane are we looking at here? Okay. Oh, look at that. I should have changed this. It tells you. Did it tell you on the other two previous ones? Oh, okay, well, not a very good quiz. So guess what you have to do? You have to go to Blackboard, right? Or your exam study guides have the figures that are exam figures, and I've erased all the labels, and that's a really good test. Don't practice that you know something if it's already labeled for you. Okay, we didn't cover body cavities, so that's where we're going to start next time, body cavities. And I'm going to go over that really fast because it's pretty simple. That's also an extra credit diagram for you today in lab. If you can draw the body cavities that I sent you in the email, then that's an extra credit point for you. Okay, make sure you have the sign-in sheet, and I'll see, when do I see you guys next in lecture? Wednesday.